Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
It's nearly 9:30, but it's not quite 9:30. And the text number this morning, as always, is 51552. So you're Ciara Whitty.
Yep.
That's a great name.
I'm very witty.
What? Are you a witty or a witty?
Witty.
W-H-I. There's a H in there. Yeah. Okay. So you're from Waterford, is that right?
Yep.
You're from the city?
City girl.
Out beyond?
No, the city.
Right in the heart of the city. So we need to go back to when you're now what age?
26, don't remind me.
Why are you throwing your eyes up to heaven? 26 is young.
Yeah, I know. Once you hit like 25, you're a quarter of a century. That's it, you know.
That's 27 is when you need to worry.
Thanks, I'm 27 in 2 months.
Well, you've got 2 months left of a worry-free existence.
Yeah.
27, I think, is when you start need to kind of looking around going, well, what
is life?
Up until then, just keep having the fun.
Yeah.
So you've got 2 months to worry about that.
Yep.
But in the meantime, let's have a chat about you and your story, because... Mm-hmm. We need to go back to actually when you were 5, which is really young.
Yeah.
When you started noticing something about yourself and the other children who were 5 years old.
Yeah.
You can go back that far, can you?
Yeah, it's my earliest memory, I think.
Right. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically when I was 5, I remember it. I can't remember what class I was in, but we were doing a Christmas play and we all had to get dressed up, and my mom had this little colourful dress she put on me, and I tinsel in my hair and I thought I was a princess, and she put on the usual Elizabeth Arden toasty beige, you know, the old reliable, and I was put on stage for like the show or whatever it was. But before the show, I went into the classroom and I remember I walked in and I saw all the girls all dressed up and pretty, but I looked at them and I was like, I'm not like them. They're all like naturally pretty. They had either straight hair or curly hair. It wasn't kinky. And they either had porcelain skin or loads of freckles. It was never in between. Mm. And they just seemed to fit their body type and fit their personality perfectly.
They were 5.
Yeah.
You were thinking in those terms.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite deep now for someone that's 5.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Because you know, most people at 5 see tinsel and you know, communion dresses recycled for angels' clothes and things like that. But you were thinking shape and size and skin and everything else.
Yeah. I was very self-aware. And I suppose as you get older, you can go one way or the other. You can use that to your advantage or it can be used to a disadvantage as well. And in my case, it was a disadvantage.
So do you remember being told that you were pretty or that you were...
Oh, yeah. I was never short of compliments.
Good.
At home, I was always told that I had beautiful big eyes and, you know, that I was just lovely. You know, I wasn't short of that at all.
So where's the next signpost then in your story after 5?
Then after that, everything kind of kept under guard, and then we moved house. And you know when you move house, everything kind of is up in a heap a little bit.
Yeah.
So I had different friends and I ended up being bullied when we moved house. And
what age were you around then?
I was about 8, I think.
Yeah.
And I kind of the opinion I didn't like myself anyway. And then when I was bullied, it verified my thoughts and my feelings.
What was the bullying? What sort of level are we talking about?
It wasn't physical. It was more verbal and just, you know, the kids can be, they can just deliberately push you out without and being mean.
The psychological warfare where nothing is said, but everything is spoken in the brain.
Yeah. And for someone that's as hypersensitive as I would be.
Yeah.
It triggered everything, I suppose.
So you were pushed out in the sense that what, you weren't part of the gang or?
Yeah, it's just that I was made feel like an outsider. And you know, when you move house, you are an outsider anyway. Because you're not familiar. It's totally unfamiliar. And my way of coping with that then was just don't eat.
Right, at 8 or 9?
Yeah, I would have always been a picky eater anyway, so I did tend to get away with it for a certain amount of time. I was like that since I was born, you know, that kids can just be picky eaters.
Yes, yeah.
And then I went to secondary school and everyone hit puberty and I just kind of stayed small.
Right.
And never really developed.
You were slight in size.
Yeah, I was always quite thin anyway.
Because you're quite tall now.
Yeah, 5'7.5".
Yeah, you know what I mean? So being slight is one thing, but small, it took you a while to get that growth. The growth spurt, as they call it, you know.
Yeah.
So you were 12, 13?
Yeah. And then people started to notice it then. I just didn't seem to get any bigger. And I think it kind of lay under wraps for a little while. Then my parents started to realise that there's a problem here.
Yeah.
I started to make myself sick after everything I ate. and it just spiraled out of control after that then. Got really bad.
And so you would have, what, breakfast or lunch or...?
No, when I was in school, I would get up in the morning, I would skip breakfast, I'd pretend I had breakfast. Oh, yeah. My parents knew I didn't. I'd skip breakfast, I'd have an apple maybe for lunch, and then I might have something then for my dinner. Something very small, chicken or pasta, very, very plain. And then straight after my dinner, I'd make myself sick and then go upstairs, do some crunches, and then go for a walk out the Dunmore Road. That's like,
yeah, where you live. Yeah. Walking. Yeah. Do some crunches.
Yeah, as in sit-ups. Like.
Sit-ups, okay. So you're exercising as well as having these, what is that bulimia that you're describing?
No, at that age it wasn't. It was just I vomited after everything.
On purpose?
Yeah, 100% on purpose.
How did you make yourself vomit?
At the start, like I would have to purposely make myself sick because then I'd have to stick my fingers down my throat, and I do apologise that this sounds gory.
No, but this is what it is. I don't like dressing things up.
Yeah.
If that's what it is, that's what it is. So so that's the truth of the matter, and that's what you did.
But then after a very short period of time, my body actually just got used to it and I could just do it standing up.
Did your folks know you weren't having breakfast? You said something that they knew that you weren't.
Yeah, every morning. My dad goes to work at 7 in the morning and... I think back then it was 8 actually, and he would say to me, you know, Ciara, did you have your breakfast? And I'd say, yeah, Dad, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And he knew. He's like, you didn't, Ciara. And I'm like, Dad, I did. And then it would end up in an argument because I was so defensive about it. But
why were you doing this?
It was the only control that I had, and it made me feel, it gave me a sense of worth, I suppose.
You're empowered.
Yeah. I felt that, I didn't think I was superior, but I felt I had a talent, I suppose. Okay. You know, not everyone can starve themselves of food and function and survive.
So you're quite impressed by your behaviour?
Yeah, I was a bit blown away now by my talents, if I'm honest.
Okay. Again, take us to what age you are at this point. What are you, a teenager? How long did this last for?
Oh, up until last year.
Oh, that long?
Yeah.
Okay, but if we're staying with the school thing, because you're 26 now, this was your second, third, fourth year, you just kept going.
It got very bad then when I was in fourth year.
Why?
I began to kind of learn more things about myself and how to make my body adapt to certain things. Like, I don't want to go into too much detail about that because there could be people listening that would use my information to encourage.
In terms of weight and what...
How to lose weight.
Achieving. That certain goal. Yeah, that awfulness of it. It's the anti-goal and it's the anti-achievement. So you don't want to get into detail there, which is totally understandable. But take us to fourth year then. What was happening in school? Were there any alarm bells ringing for teachers, parents, friends?
Yeah, a few teachers, actually probably all the teachers, knew there was something going on. And the girls I was in class with as well, they all knew. But no one really knew how to deal with it. The school did the best they could with it, but, you know, you need specialist treatment. And it was then that my GP referred me to the Department of Adolescent Psychiatry in Waterford.
Yeah.
And it was grand, you know, it was pretty general, you know, I'd get weighed and then I'd go in and see a psychologist, but I didn't want to get better and I couldn't see that it was having a problem on my life.
Yeah.
You know?
So they couldn't break through you to you at all. So you were going through the motions. You were going to make the appointments. You weren't avoiding them.
Yeah.
You're being weighed. You were going to the psychologist, but you were having none of it, really.
No, I threw a chair at a psychologist before.
Why?
She angered me a lot.
Oh, how did she annoy you?
She just was pushing at me. She asked me to write out some stuff, and being the neat freak that I am, I like wrote out, I drew pencil lines so my writing would be straight. Then I wrote the pencil lines out so she wouldn't see it. But then she was examining the page and she was like, did you draw lines on this? And I was like, I actually can't deal with you right now. And I just lost the plot. I didn't go back to her. But sure, she's a lovely person.
I'm sure she is, but you threw a chair at her, which is, that's an odd thing to do, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no.
No, but it suggests that you might be kind of angry. Or
I was angry, yeah. I was angry that she was questioning my methods.
Yeah.
I got angry at a lot of people that challenged me.
And was that part and parcel of the sickness?
Yeah,
the
it's
illness?
A defence mechanism.
Yeah. Did you become quite an unpleasant person, I wonder?
I like to think that I was somewhat nice, and I was, but if you brought up the eating disorder, I was a horrible person.
So that was the red button issue for you.
Yeah.
Everything else was fine, but don't mention the war.
Yeah, it's just, you don't know, it's kind of like, you don't know my life, you don't know where I've been, so... don't, if you don't know anything about it, don't say anything.
Okay, so you take it to 17 years old. You know, you're now obviously, you must have been physically looking pretty, pretty poorly.
Yeah, I remember I was at a funeral of a distant relative and I sat down on the bench in the church and I could just, I thought my bones were going to just crack through my skin. It was awful. And I started crying, and then my uncle was comforting me. He thought I was crying about the funeral, but I was like, no, I'm in pain. But, you know, at that point then it just got really bad. And I was sent to, I had problems with my heart, and I was in coronary care in Ardkeen. And the consultant that I was under, he's retired now, but he would have been good friends with my family.
Yeah.
And he said, she's not leaving here without an appointment up in John of God's in Stillorgan.
Yeah.
Yes, then I...
You went there.
Yeah, I went
there. How is that going through the doors there?
As a person, I do everything to the best of my ability, and I do like to be the best at anything that I do. So I went in and I was like, I'm going to be the best recovered anorexic in the world. And oh God, it was unusual.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we're all like that.
Yeah.
And then the way I'd explain it is when you're in school and when you're at that age, everyone is afforded the same opportunities. So we all either went to choir, we played sports, we all went on the same school tours, you know, it's that kind of stuff. Mm. So I didn't really see the impact it was having on my life. Yeah, I was in hospital over my heart, but it didn't kill me, so I'm okay. So I could see the pain it was causing my family. So I said, look, I'll go in and do the program because I want to get better for them. But that didn't work.
How long were you in John of God's?
I think it was about 3 or 4 months.
And what sort? That's quite a long time, for I would have thought, for anyone to be.
Yeah, the program is 12 weeks
when
you go in, and it's inpatient for the majority of it. But when I was there, I don't know if it's changed now. And they were absolutely fantastic in there.
Did you feel that you were just going through the motions?
Yeah.
You weren't getting involved in the party at all, were you?
Oh, no.
No.
I was telling them exactly what they wanted to hear.
Really? So you were manipulating them?
Really?
That's quite something. I mean, given that you... Because you're obviously extremely smart.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Well, you know, it takes a lot to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But that's quite mischievous, and I mean that in the bad sense, really.
Yeah.
That you were, you know what I mean?
You were
playing this game, and you were kind of wasting everyone's time, including your own.
Yeah. I just thought... It was just like an act I had to play. And I remember even sitting in, and I was under Terence Larkin. He was a lovely fella and used to wear lovely socks. And
Is he a doctor?
Yeah, he's the director of the programme, and he used to have great analogies. And you sit there saying, you know, Kira, this is you have a great prognosis ahead, you know, and I really believe that. And here I was sitting there going, this man, he has no clue, you know, and that was... It's just the power that you have.
Right.
So I came out of there and I was grand.
And you came out of there and you felt you were grand, but you weren't, of course,
no,
because you hadn't remotely engaged in the treatment.
No.
So what was the next point? Because there you are coming out. You went to what? You went to college, didn't you? I mean, I'm no surprise there. What did you go to do?
UCD.
For what? So you went to UCD.
Yeah.
And did you get involved, or were you just too unwell to be involved?
No, I thought that I could just go there and... just exercise and do this
and remain anorexic
I picked up a lot from John of God's, which in a bad sense, because I knew how to go about bulimia. I had never properly heard about it until I heard girls discussing it in John of God's, and I was like, this is great, I'll use this to my advantage. It's not good.
Not good, yeah.
So went to college. It was anorexia and bulimia. I had no life, and I could see everyone had all these different opportunities in college, and I was like, why can't I go on a J1? Why can't I, you know, stay up here at the weekends?
And why couldn't you?
Because my parents, I'd say, were terrified that I'd come home in a box, that I'd be dead if I went away.
And what were you doing in college, in the sense that on a day-to-day, wherever you were staying or living, were you just living this foodless existence?
Yeah.
I mean, how were you staying alive if you weren't eating?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I would make myself sick after every single thing I ate, even water. I didn't take anything into my body. It's just mad. I don't know how I survived.
You then had a kind of mentally and physically, you must have been pretty much against the wall.
Yeah, you do, but you kind of go on an overdrive, you know, and you're in this zone, and you're kind of in a state of euphoria because you're losing weight and... Yeah. It's just not reality.
So how did you end up in St. Patrick's Hospital then?
I rang my doctor at the time, and I said to him, I gave him an awful time as well, actually. Yeah. I said to him, come here, I think I should probably go into hospital. And he said, I've been waiting 2 years for you to say that.
Right. So you made the call.
I did this time, yeah. So then I went into Pat's and St. Patrick's Hospital. Yeah. They were great in there. And again, I did the programme. And I did it well.
You're playing the game again? Or
kind of. But then towards the end, I was like, God, I should really start applying myself to therapy. You know, and it was towards the end of my duration up there. So then they referred me down to a therapist down in Waterford. And that woman, like, she just saved my life. Like, she's just fantastic.
She connected with you?
Yeah. I tried to make her life hell and I resisted. But I had met my match with her. She challenged me.
That's great.
Not the time.
How did she break you down? Because you'd say you're a tough cookie to break down. So yeah. How did she do that?
I don't know.
What did she say that made you think, okay, I'm not dealing with just another one of those types?
I think, you see, the year following St. Patrick's Hospital, I got really badly depressed and I just couldn't deal with the fact that I'd lost everything. I'd lost my friends, lost any independence, lost my dignity. And I just said, this isn't worth this. Recovery isn't worth this anymore. So I tried to kill myself 3 times. And she, I remember after the 3rd time, I was in hospital for about a month and I walked up to her office and I walked in and I sat down and I was just in this zone. I wasn't even there. And I was like, yeah, and I tried to do this. And it was as if it wasn't me I was speaking about. And she just kind of, she gave out to me. Yeah, she really gave out to me. And I wasn't used to that at all. And she said, look, if you're going to be like this, I can't work with you. And I had enough sense to know that she, even after the full year that I'd been with her, I'd put her through hell, but she didn't kind of abandon me. She just stuck with me and said, look, she said, I can help you if you want to work with me, but if you're going to keep doing this, you're on your own. I was like, oh, damn, I better start pulling my socks up.
Right, you just hit the right person at the right time.
Yeah, it's all to do with, not luck, but it's to do with your personality, I suppose.
Was your granddad part of your story?
Yeah.
God, my granddad. A terrible
accident.
Story. Yeah, what happened?
It was a couple of weeks after I actually got out of hospital the last time I tried to kill myself. And he was going over to get the paper, as he did every morning. And he was knocked down by a truck, a lorry. And he had, I won't even go into the details, but he had a horrific death. 86 years of age. He was telling everyone he was nearly 100. We were kind of like, calm down, granddad. You know. All right. At that stage, I remember I was so shocked. And at the funeral, I remember looking at my mum and my aunts and everyone. And I was just like, oh my God, the pain that they're experiencing. Yeah. And it was a different sort of pain, even that I experienced. Mm. It was a pain I had no control over and that I didn't cause. And it was just, it took that for me to say, whoa, hang on a second. I don't want to cause that pain. Maybe I'm not going to commit suicide. And I used to always think I was kind of invincible. Thought I was a superhero or something, you know?
Yeah, I believe that.
I'm definitely not.
Yeah.
Life can be taken at any given stage. And it just gave me this appreciation for life that you can't buy.
So this kind of grisly trigger.
Yeah.
Did help you. Mm. In a terribly sad way.
Yeah.
It did. And then this amazing figure in Waterford who turned around and said, if you're going to take the mick, you can get out of here, otherwise I'll help you. Essentially, sounds like she said that.
She is lovely, though.
No, but I like her. You needed tough love.
Yeah,
and
I did.
You got it. It was the only love you were going to respond to by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
And then you started getting better.
Yeah.
How?
My granddad, I suppose. And then I just, the way I can describe it is, after my granddad died, when I was sick for about 17 years of my life, it was like I saw the world in black and white. And then shortly after colour, it just started to come into my life. And I was just like, how do people not appreciate life? It's so amazing. You know, I think when you've been the lowest of the low and when you've hit rock bottom several times, you do really appreciate the tiniest things. I joined back the gym, which everyone's a little hesitant of that at first because they were like, oh.
Some people get addicted to the gym, as you know.
Yeah, and I was. But my reason for joining the gym is that I wanted to get stronger.
Okay.
I had wasted away a lot of muscle and I wanted to build or medicine and stuff. And then I got a job, a full-time job in Age Tech, where I work now.
What's that?
It's a call centre.
Are you on the phones?
Yeah, I like to talk.
Are you ever off the phone?
Yeah, what do you mean?
I'm just saying that.
I can't tell that they're listening.
What I was going to say was they're lucky to have you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you got a job, but that gave you security and...
independence.
And a daily thing to do and so on. Okay, that's great. And, and a salary or wage.
Yeah, give independence. I really put it a lot of it down to the actual job itself.
Really?
I don't think the guys in work actually realise how much they've helped me. We're like a big, huge family in there.
Right, okay.
We are. And they're all so supportive.
In
anything,
Waterford.
Anything anyone does. And it's just, you have people from all walks of life. And it's just the social aspect of it as well. Yeah. You know, there's a lot to be said coming into work and speaking to different people every single day. You know, it gives you a purpose. And I suppose I wanted to just see my family happy. I wanted to bring my family, my friends, you know.
Back from the bad place.
It's very, like, you don't hear it that often, and it's very rare that you get a second chance at life. And I got it, so I'm making the most of it, you know.
When did it start, do you think?
My second life.
Mm-hmm.
After my granddad died.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's awful to say that it took that for me to cop on, but I think that he's definitely looking over me and helping me in some way. Thanks, Grandad.
Can you remember the first time in recent times that you enjoyed food and thought, yeah, I can handle this. It's quite tasty, actually.
There's been so many times.
Well, the first, when you realised the colour is coming back into the grey.
Yeah, this isn't going to go well with my blog and all that, but my clean eating, but it was definitely Rice Krispies. I remember Dad was like standing at the sink, and I just put like a spoon into my mouth, and I was like, "Oh my god, I can hear the snap, crack, and pop." I was like, "This is so amazing!" And Dad was like, "What is wrong with you?" I was like, "It's Rice Krispies." This sounds really weird to anyone that's listening.
No. If they've heard the story from the start, they'll know it's a lovely finish to the story.
But since then, I have developed my taste for food. It has gone a lot better.
And how are you today then?
I'm great. Yeah. Anyone that's listening that does have an eating disorder or is going through recovery, it doesn't go away overnight. And I don't think it ever fully leaves you. But... like, I do have days where I'm in bed and I'm like, I just can't do this. I can't get up tomorrow. And
I think everyone has those days.
Exactly. It's
so
no
don't
different.
Don't worry about that. Yeah. Don't think you're, you know, you're in a table, a minority of one, when you just go, I couldn't face the world today.
It's like, what
that's
is life?
Human condition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not deluded insofar as I think that life is this perfect place. It's not. It has its ups and downs, but I'm very grateful for the experience that I've had. I don't regret a second of it.
And you, of all people, brought cakes in for us today. I mean, I don't mind Maya Dunphy bringing in cake for us, but you, after your story, bringing in cakes is either brilliant or bizarre. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like she's a feeder. No.
Yeah, that's it.
She's a they're clean. They're clean cakes. It's like scones and clean, gluten-free, vegan.
Oh, dairy.
They're lovely.
Not, they're not lovely.
Ask my dad.
There's no crack in that.
They're lovely.
It's all the good
cookies.
Stuff is gone.
Look, Ryan, I want you to be healthier.
So you brought in, what is it called? You have a food blog. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's called Madame Blueberry. It's
if you don't mind.
If you don't mind, this is awkward.
Why? Madame Blueberry.
People call it Madame Butterfly. I'm like, no,
that's
not that person. it's a food vlog, and it's about my recovery from an eating disorder.
Oh, good on you, okay.
But it's not really depressing. I kind of have a tendency to laugh at myself and take the mick out of my stories.
Good.
It's not a blog on how to recover from eating disorders, but I think it's just a happy and more positive
it's
aspect.
A brighter side to a dark story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's, at the end of every post, there's a blog.
Okay.
Obviously it's a blog. At the end of every post, there's a recipe about like good, healthy, clean food. And just to say, anyone that's like listening to this, that's a dietitian or
here we go,
a doctor or anything, it's not that I'm restricting on food. If you look at the recipes, it's full of carbs, everything. Yeah. There's enough nutrients in it to keep you going.
Well, you bounced back, didn't you? You made quite the recovery.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you seem to be like in a particularly good place, as they say now.
I'm happy.
I don't just you say hopefully.
Yeah, I just probably regretted saying that. No, I think you always have to be very aware that there are times when, you know, you could possibly fall back. But once you just remember that it's not worth it, and you have, if I did fall back now, I've way too much to lose. I've gained so much. No pun intended. I've gained so much that I just couldn't leave it go.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you this morning.
Thanks, I've enjoyed your company.
And, you know, it's because that's not easy to tell the story, but to tell it in a way that you've told it, which is searingly honest and with a dollop of humour along the way, is pretty impressive. So, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
Ciara Whitty joining us live in studio this morning. We'll do a picture for our Facebook page, can
we? Oh, yeah, definitely.
They'll be dying to have a look
selfies
at you. Yeah, let's do it. Okay.